Blog Talk Radio. I don't know about the rest of you, but I love this time of the day. I love how the cool, crisp night air kisses the ground, leaving behind a gentle layer of dew. I love looking up into the night sky and seeing the moon shining down upon us like an old, trusted friend. I look forward to spending our Thursday nights here together on Blog Talk Radio as we travel together on this journey into the night.
Deadly Reads Radio, Journey into the Night. My name is Linda Barton, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime, Lisa Vandeveer. Hey, Lisa, you want to say hi to everybody?
Hello, everyone, and we're glad you're with us tonight. So we have got a wonderful show in store for you, so we're excited about it.
Yes, we are. It's going to be fun tonight. So now, everybody, just to let you know, Lisa's putting the final touches on getting school ready for her daughter. Hi, Lisa.
Yes. It's getting exciting.
As everybody knows, Lisa homeschools her daughter, so she's been getting everything ready, books and plans, and you've been running the tires off your car this last week.
Oh, yes, I have. I've been running for homeschool, getting my homeschool supplies together and everything, but I'm also preparing for a trip again with the horse shows. So, you know, that, between that and homeschool, I have my poor little car has gotten a lot of miles on it this week.
Oh, well, that's good. You know, these are fun memories you'll always have. So I remember being taxi service and running like crazy, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are special memories that moms get to have.
Yes, they certainly are.
Yeah. Well, all you know that listen to us on a regular basis, we were here Tuesday night. We had to do a little special show because last Thursday, Blog Talk was having some problems. So tonight's our second show of the week. And we are so thrilled. Yes, we have Carlisle Toms. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I didn't ask him before the show started. Oops. But anyway, he's joining us this evening. Now, Carlisle, he's a writer who grew up in rural Ozarks poverty. He completed his master's degree in clinical social work in 1981 and worked most of his career in mental health services and addictions treatment. He has written for different regional magazines and newspapers over the years and has often been selected to speak at both professional and non-professional events as well as on Top Rock. As well as on radio talk shows. However, he had never written or published fiction until completing his first novel in 2012. His general method for fiction has been to define a character and allow that character to tell his or her own story from first-person perspective as though the character is writing an autobiography. Through his characters, he explores the psychology of the human condition, as well as the various elements and entanglements of personalities. His novels incorporate the social and historical influences surrounding the lifetimes of his characters and are stories of overcoming social, emotional, and spiritual challenges. So, it sounds like we're going to have an entertaining time tonight talking with Carlisle. So, let's give him a warm Desi Reads welcome. Hi, Carlisle. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Carlisle.
Hi, and thank you. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're so thrilled to have you here. It sounds like you've been quite a busy man in your career.
I usually stay busy. That's kind of one of the ways I stay sane is I'm always doing something. And of course, the creative bug has been something with me since I was a child. I've just kind of cannot not create something.
Good. That's good. That's a sign of a strong mind. That's a sign of a very strong mind. Now, before we get going into your writing, can you share with us your experiences while you were in the mental health addiction field?
Well, I'll kind of share how that all came about. I had actually started in high school with a high school counselor who did an elective psychology class that I took, and that got me interested. And folks who have read on my blog page, Hate My Story, gives a lot of information about what I was going through as a child, and so this intrigued me, the psychology class did. So when I got to college, I majored in behavioral science, and then as soon as I got there also, I went to the campus counselor and said, sign me up for therapy. And so I kind of did both at the same time. I worked on my own therapy starting at 18 years old and then studied behavioral science in undergraduate. Then after undergraduate school and got my bachelor's, I worked for a couple of years for a small community mental health center in rural Arkansas. And that job was coordinating with the state hospitals. That job was going out into the community to pick up people who were schizophrenic, who had no transportation, bring them into the office for injections and medications that they needed. And then graduate field placement ended up with Drug and Alcohol Counseling Center, worked for a couple of different state hospitals. I was in private practice in Nashville for about 7 years. Most recently worked for a little community hospital in Missouri. So I've had quite a bit of experience over the years, roughly at this point 35 plus years of experience treating addictions and mental health.
Well, I'm sure that gave you some really good insight into the types of characters you decided to use for your books also, because reading your bio, I could see that.
I make a policy that I don't I don't knowingly use anybody that I have ever come across in treatment.
Oh, really?
I don't think
exactly.
That's fair
to
them.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But
no, but I mean,
I
you know, that
my,
you have...
I use my knowledge, you know, I use my
mm-hmm.
education, I use years of experience of learning about people, learning about personality types, learning about
mm-hmm.
Different conflicts that people have.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those have come out of my own relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, well, I can understand. I mean, we all, as authors, we all, you know, will incorporate people we've met. And it may just be just a brief blip of that person, you know, not the person, but just something about them. We will, or something about ourselves, or something we've seen, or a place we've been. We all incorporate that into our writing because that's what makes it more real, you know. So I could see where,
and
you know, you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sometimes it just makes it more fun too. I mean, there's
right.
a character in my current novel, and I told the coworker that I was going to do this. The character in the novel is male, but the coworker
mm-hmm.
that I worked with had this little quirk that I was just amused by, and I used that little quirk on the character in the novel, and that was that whenever she talked to somebody, she would go, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right, mm-hmm, yeah, yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. And so I incorporated that into the character in the novel.
Yeah. I think we've all done that. I've done that with some of my characters. I'm sure Lisa has, too. Over the years, you know people, and you know, you're writing your book, and you've got this image in your mind of what a character is, and then all of a sudden something will pop in your mind, and you'll remember something about somebody, and you just kind of giggle. And, you know, you're not
right.
using their name, and you're not using anything that, you know, anybody's going to be able to know you're talking about them. But, you know,
yeah
I can see where you would do that.
Unless it's the person.
Huh?
Hey, you wrote that. Unless it's the person. Hey, you wrote that novel about me.
Yeah,
right.
Or you used that character about me.
Well, that's one of the things. I was careful to talk to this lady I worked with and tell
right.
her, you know, I think this is so cute. I'm going to use it in my novel. Sure, fine,
right.
fine.
Yeah.
But most people are flattered. Because I've told a couple of people over the years, you know, I said, you know, there's something, you know, this whatever about you, or I kind of based a character on you. So, oh, that's so cool, you know. And so most people think it's great. So,
yeah.
But anyway. So now you also have written for regional magazines and newspapers, you said, at the beginning of your career. So what kind of things did you write for that?
Well, I wrote for several years from like 94 to 97 for Recovery Times magazine, which
mm-hmm.
was published out of Memphis. And this was also around the time that I was in private practice in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a monthly featured article. And what I did for them was I would take a story from my childhood and tell that story, wrap that around at the end with a moral about addictions recovery or codependency recovery, that kind of thing. That I've tried to find that magazine online. It's been so many years. I had to stop writing for them in 97. It's a long story, but I basically had to move back to the Ozarks to take care of my grandmother and was just too overwhelmed with caring for her and everything else that was going on to be able to continue to write for them. And I've not been able to, I lost contact with them after that. I've not been able to find that, but I was published with people like Alan Cohen, Roquel Lerner, Father Leo Booth, Tom Rutledge. These folks had monthly featured articles in the magazine. Those guys I just named are all authors. They're either self-help or addictions recovery authors. I was able to meet Roquel Lerner around that time and actually had done a self-help book between 95 and 97, and Roquel Lerner endorsed that book for me. Had that book endorsed by several different people. It was too early, I guess. It was a coloring book self-help journal.
Oh,
and
that's
in those days, the publishing companies just were kind of going, yeah, but so now coloring books are everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, that's all the craze. Wow, mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So then now you also...
I may try to republish that or get it published at some point. I may try, now since the times have changed, I may try to publish that myself.
I think that would be a great idea. I think you should do it.
I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially with self-publishing nowadays, you could just do it yourself. So, I mean, that makes it a lot
mm-hmm.
nicer.
Yeah. I'm thinking about doing, I'm not sure, I'll have to figure things out, but I'm thinking about doing it as a PDF on the website that people can purchase and then just download the PDF and print off the pages off their printer and then color the pages after they print them off.
Yeah, you could do that.
That might work.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah,
uh-huh. That would be good.
Yeah. I mean, the technology today is wonderful. It has opened up so many doors so people can be so creative and, you know, offer things in ways that we couldn't 10 years ago, you know. So
yeah.
This is, it makes it so much better.
The good news is it's much easier to get published than it used to be. The bad news is it's much easier to get published than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what type of professional and non-professional speaking events did you do? Is this also in the...
I'm a member of Toastmasters, and they would ding me for all my oohs and ahs on here because you're not supposed to have all these ahs in your speeches. But I have done presentations for conferences where I would teach about things like post-traumatic stress disorder. I did a little booklet in Nashville called Creating Calm, which gentle methods of anxiety management.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also thinking about possibly republishing that. I just basically did that as a booklet in my practice that I would give away. But I'm looking at putting that together again, getting that into a format where it's more of a book form. I think there are a couple of areas of that I want to combine. I'm not sure, as I'm talking about these things, I'm not sure when I'll get them done or when I'll be able to get them out there, but those are some of the things that I'm considering doing in addition to the fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You sound just like Lisa and I, 5 million ideas and not enough hours in the day.
Right.
Exactly. Yep.
Right.
That is so true.
I always joke and I say, I have this long list of to-be-written books, you know, and I'm going to have to be at least probably 230-some-odd years old before I ever get them all finished. So
right.
I'm going to be around for a while because I can't die till they're all written, so... But anyway, that sounds interesting.
It gives you a reason to hang around.
It
That's
does.
Right.
I'm gonna stay around. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna stay around and torment the world. I'm not leaving anytime soon. But anyway, so now, what was your first novel? What was it about? And the title and all that. Tell us a little bit about.
Well, this novel kind of came up. It's strange. It came about by accident. It started out as a joke, and I was joking around with a friend, and, you know, what if there's this old hippie woman smoked, and, you know, and she made the comment that my daughter would never dress out for gym class. That's because one nipple pointed up and one nipple pointed down, and all the children called her tiddlywinks. And it started out as that kind of just me popping off stuff off the top of my head, and it got a laugh, and I thought, well, let's see what else she had to say. So I sat down to just kind of give her a voice and let her tell what she wanted to say, and by golly, it turned into something totally different.
Sounds really interesting.
That joke never came out in the novel. It turned into 1960s, all the turmoil of the 1960s. The protagonist's name is Lavella. Lavella's conflict with her mother, who was very controlling, and her protecting of her father, who was an alcoholic, and she favored her father and tried to protect him from her controlling mother, and grew up, and then in high school figured out that she could really get her mom's goat by sexually acting out and getting in trouble, and the bigger the trouble she got into, the more aghast her mother was. And so she just basically set about through her behavior to just rip her mother up on that, all of that controlling and putting on a face for the community kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And even to the point that, you know, she said, I'm going to go to Penn State and study and be a sex therapist. Mm-hmm. But that didn't turn out the way she thought either. She went to Penn State. She met Earl. Earl's a tall, lanky, ugly hippie. And he proceeded to take her on a journey through life and introduce her to things that she had never experienced before.
Mm-hmm,
and so the story kind of goes from there. And then Earl has his own conflicts with his own father that are kind of similar to Lavella's mm-hmm. conflicts with her mother. And so that's one of the things that kind of binds them together through the mm-hmm. story. So in a lot of ways, it's a mother-daughter story. It's a father-daughter story. It's a love story. It's a romance. Mm-hmm. It's also a story about all of the upheaval and conflict of the 1960s, the peace marches, Martin Luther King assassination, the Vietnam War. Lavella's best friend goes to Vietnam, and she deals with this whole conflict over her friend going to and coming back from Vietnam and what happened to him as a result of being in Vietnam. So there are lots of layers to it, but I guess ultimately the main thread through it is the mother and daughter thing.
Coming
to resolution
with that. So then basically you said it's written like almost like an autobiography. So is the book entirely from her perspective then?
From her
correct?
Perspective, written from first person female. And, you know, that, I don't know what it's like to be a woman, but I checked it out with some female friends and had them read it. You know, am I getting this right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you're getting it right. So, you know, and the next novel has a male protagonist. So they switch out. They're tied together by each... a meeting. That's why it's called the soul encounters. There is this meeting with someone, and that person who the protagonist meets then becomes the protagonist of the next novel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
That's an interesting
it
way
is.
To do that. Yeah, I like that.
So now, how did you find writing in the first person?
It just kind of came. It felt like I was channeling. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I did my research. I researched timelines and I researched events that were happening in the 1960s. And that just seemed to kind of fall together as well because the age of the characters, the things that were occurring at that time, their involvement with those things that occurred at that time, it just seemed like it just kind of fell into place. There was very little tweaking in regard to that. But I certainly learned a lot more about the 1960s than I had realized. Because, you know, I was 14 years old in 1967. I was kind of there and kind of not there. And, of course, up in the Ozarks, we were separated from a lot of the rest of the world. One or two TV channels.
Yeah, well, doing research, though, is, to me, is just like you said, it opens up, and you feel like sometimes, or at least I do, when I'm doing research on different eras, I get so lost into it, I feel like that I'm there. Some of it is just really interesting, so I love doing research.
Well, the internet makes it that, you know, that's the thing too. I don't know that I would have been as likely to have written this novel pre-internet.
Right.
Because I can just pull up another page on another website, go and look in and do a search on timelines of this and what was happening in. I can pull up and put timelines that say between May of 1967 and June of 1968, what kind of events were going on in the world.
And it's good, yeah. It's precise. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I do too,
Much easier.
And, you know, it makes the story more believable to the reader too because it has authenticity.
It does.
I mean, it's not, you know, everybody, you're going to have people that have were there during that era, or you're going to have people that have studied that era, you know, mm-hmm. and it's going to make it more real. And, you know, then you wonder how many people go, oh, that's so interesting, I want to know more. So then they start Googling it, you know, doing the research. So, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, you open up a whole yeah. world to the readers by doing that type of research for stories.
Right, I agree.
So, so now are all of your books going to be written in the first person, or is this just a certain
yeah.
for a certain
well,
group of them, all of them?
This particular series is going to be written that way. I don't always write that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've written short stories that were not in first person. I don't always write that way, but this particular series is going to be written that way. It's going there are so far four characters who are each going to tell their story, and they sort of Lavella interacts with the character of the second novel. He interacts with the character of the third novel, and the character of the third novel interacts with the character of the fourth novel.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh.
they each have different stories to tell, but it's kind of like, have you ever sat down with somebody at a party or something like that, had this deep, meaningful, wonderful conversation that sort of flipped a switch in your mind and made you think about something or want to change something in your life, and then you never see that person again?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's that kind
mm-hmm.
of scenario where the person interacts with someone who brings about a change in their life.
Interesting.
And sometimes those interactions are large and sometimes they're small, but then
mm-hmm.
that interaction flips into that person telling his or her story in the next novel.
That's an interesting concept. I don't think I've ever heard of anything like that before in a story. So that's, I think you've got something there. So that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very much so. I've always been intrigued by people that wrote in the first person, because I've never done it before. And I've got several published books out there. But the other day I woke up and had a story on my mind, and I'll be darned, is I'm currently writing my first person book in the first person. So
mm-hmm.
I was really intrigued to see, you know, to listen to how you feel about it and how you described your character and everything like that. And I want to tell you, I was sitting here nodding my head up and down going, uh-huh, I understand, uh-huh, because I've been experiencing the same thing with my character, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking to me. She's telling me her story. It's kind of autobiographical, too. I mean, it's
almost like you're channeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
If you've
That's
ever
how
been
I feel.
Around people who do that, yeah, it's like they just talk. Through you.
Yeah.
For me, it's been like I'm just watching the story unfold. They're telling
mm-hmm.
the story. I'm just typing it.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
I started writing this, what was it, day for yesterday, Lisa? Something like that?
I believe so. Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm already up over 18,000 words. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
just like pouring out of me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's going to be a novella. I don't see, you know, it won't be a full-length one because of the story type that it is. But, you know, I mean, if I sat down, I'll have this thing done tomorrow, you know, at this
mm-hmm.
current rate. But it's just, it's exactly like you said.
I think in some ways it's more cathartic.
Oh, gosh.
Don't you
yes.
think it's more
fine.
Cathartic to do that? Because when you write in from another, it separates you. But when you're writing
mm-hmm.
first person, it's more intimate with the character.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I don't know if you did it when you wrote yours, but I'm finding with this one that I'm in that character. I'm not her. She's not me. But there's so many aspects of me and my life and the people that I've met and my experiences and my what if this would have happened, or, you know, what if that would have happened? It's all in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband looked over at me yesterday, and I was just sobbing. I just was typing. I had tears running down my cheeks. And he goes, are you okay? And I said, yeah. And I told him what it was all about. He said, honey, that's been in you for years. You've needed to get it out. You know, and
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you know. And so, you know, I was, like I said, when you were explaining it, I was sitting over here. It's a good thing nobody could see me because I probably look like a damn fool. But I was nodding my head up and down and grinning, going, yep, 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 you know. So anyway, back to you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to steal your time.
Well, that's all right. It's a good conversation.
But anyway, now, how do you come up with your ideas? Do they just come to you, or, I mean, do you actually try to plan them out?
No, the characters come to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They just start talking to me. I did not know when I wrote this first novel that the character that showed up, there's a character who showed up and she had an interaction with him, and he started talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay. And then I was, last year sometime, Christmas 2014, and I was making Christmas candy in the kitchen making candy, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, the first line of the third novel came to me. This character just showed up and started talking to me, and I went down right then and wrote the first three pages of the third novel.
Mm-hmm.
So the characters, more than anything else, they just show up and start talking.
Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of how you're like you said in your first novel, she meets him, and then they have their experience together, and then you tell his story, and it goes on from there for each novel. I really like that idea. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone doing that before, so I think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think it just happened that way. It just this has been so there's been so much serendipity and things that have just kind of fallen out of the sky, and I'm just letting that happen. I have worked with ideas for novels for many, many years. I've got like three or four science fiction novels in my head, but I've never written them. They've been, those science fiction novels have been in my head since the late 70s, early 1980s, but I've never written them.
Right.
And so this is a completely different experience. I have the plot lines for those novels, and I can see the whole process of the story. There's one that's kind of a murder mystery novel, and I have the plot line in my head, but those novels have never been written. This is different. And I don't know why it happened. It just kind of started happening, and I just allowed that to happen and just wrote it. And I was very, very pleased. I wrote this, and I thought, well, people are going to think it's crap. You know, I'm just sitting down writing this stuff. I've never written anything like this before. And then the first person who took a look at it was Sue Sherry, and she's one of the people who endorsed the novel. Sue has her own autobiography out about growing up in an orphanage in New York. Her husband, Frank Sherry, has about 15 or more novels in publication, and they moved to the Ozarks from Manhattan, retired to this little town. And so, and I ran across them in community theater, and so when I had written this, I'd asked Sue, "Would you read this? Would you tell me what you think?" She read it and she said, "I think this is really good, and I think we need to work on getting this published." And then she helped me in the process of that and helped me prepare it for publication.
Mm-hmm.
Frank, unfortunately, had developed dementia, and unfortunately, he was not able to read it or give me any kind of feedback on it.
Aww,
but Sue got
so
me started. And then I was very pleased. Meredith Sisko, who worked on Winter's Bone. Winter's Bone, this film, nominated for 4 Academy Awards, basically launched Jennifer Lawrence's career. And won the grand jury prize at Sundance, and Meredith also lived in that little town. And I was able to contact her and ask her if she would take a look at it. She agreed that she would read it. She was teaching at the university there at the time. And she gave a wonderful endorsement of the book, a beautiful review of the book. And I thought, okay, well, it's better than I expected.
Right.
So most people who have read it have liked it. There's one person who kind of didn't like the fact that there was so much drug, sex, rock and roll in it. But it's the 1960s. If you remember it, you weren't there.
Yeah. Right, that was the 60s.
That was the era, yeah. You can't do something about the 60s and not have that in there.
Exactly.
That's really, I know the reason why you haven't published your sci-fis. I was sitting here nodding my head going, I know, waving my hand. It's because those characters aren't alive in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I found that... Mm-hmm. They have to speak. I've just gotten, me starting this new story I was telling about earlier, I have been on, it's been months, I've been in a dry spell, haven't I, Lisa?
Yes, you have. Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't bring myself to sit down and write. I could edit other people's, loved it, had fun doing it. I was still working, but to sit down and actually create my own, the well was dry. The characters had gone on vacation, weren't talking, is what I always joke about,
Yeah.
And that's why you haven't been able to write those, because the characters mm-hmm. have to talk. They have to be alive in your mind and wanting to talk,
Right, and it's not just the story. The thing about it is it's not just the plot. It is the interaction of the characters that create
mm-hmm.
that plot. And in some respects, mm-hmm. I think that's more important than the plot.
Right.
And that's, I think you're exactly right. I think in this first novel, I wrote the end of that novel and sat there and cried. And every time I read the end of that novel for several times, of course, we went over and over and over this to get it ready mm-hmm. for publication. Every
mm-hmm.
time I read the end of that novel, I cried, and it is because at the end of this novel, it brings something together. It brings that whole conflict to a point of love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's the story. But I can
mm-hmm.
sit down and I can create sci-fi scenarios in my head, and what if this and what if that and what if this and what if that.
Mm-hmm.
And if those characters don't feel real,
mm-hmm.
the plot is irrelevant.
Sure. It is. It truly is. Their
mm-hmm.
characters.
You're right.
Your characters, and it doesn't matter what genre. If your characters don't reach out and grab the reader and make the reader want to know them, and invest in them and root for them
mm-hmm.
and cry for them and cheer or whatever, then your book is just words. It's just
that's
places
true.
And events,
mm-hmm.
and so,
well, we've read
you know,
books like that, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
I know I've read
that
books
one,
like that where
oh, yeah.
I would get two or three chapters into it and go, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
What's the purpose
mm-hmm.
here? What's the purpose? Okay, yeah, boom, boom, bang, bang, a big deal, or whatever, Yeah. Now, I do have one question to ask you, because Lisa and I both always talk about the voices, when we're writing. The voices tell us what to do. Have you ever had an argument with your voices?
No, I don't think I have.
Damn it.
Because I just did what
the
they told
one,
me to do.
He's analyzing you right now, thinking, oh,
I know it.
Probably the closest thing that I had to an argument with Lavella right after she got pregnant with her first child.
Mm-hmm.
It just stopped. It stopped. I had no idea where to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't write for a year.
Oh, wow.
At least a year I didn't write at all. And it just sat there in the computer. And then when I came back to it, I sort of backed up about a page or two, picked
mm-hmm.
it up from there, and finished the novel.
Wow.
And I don't know if that in terms of an argument with a character, but it was just like, I think I was trying to dictate where it was going to go instead of listening
mm-hmm.
to her tell me
mm-hmm.
where
oh.
it was going to go.
I guess I'm the only... That's true. No, I honestly had a full-blown argument, pacing the floor. No, I don't want to go that way. It was It was psychotic night, I guess, for me. I did surrender, and the voice won the argument, and I wrote the book, the ending, the way the voice said, and it was the perfect ending, and so I no longer argue, I surrender. So. But I've asked other writers.
But Lisa. You can't force a story. You can, you can forcefully write a story, and perhaps it might be a decent story, but if you listen to the story and to the characters, it will be a much better story if you listen to the characters' voices.
Well, it's kind of like Star Wars. You trust the Force.
Right. Right.
Exactly. That's a good way to do it. That's a good way to think of it. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So now, how many of those books are going to be in that series? You said four?
There are at least
four.
I don't know if more characters will show up or not, but there are four that have shown up. So, the first one's, of course, already done. There are three more characters who have shown up.
Mm-hmm.
The second book is probably 2/3 to 3/4 done. And so I'm just waiting for the wrap-up of that. I know where that's going. I know what's going to happen. And he actually is not going to encounter the character from the first book until pretty much the end of his book.
No.
And so then they encounter that he had with Lavella, who's the protagonist of the first book. The first book's going to give her perspective, what she thought of that encounter. The second book is going to give his perspective, what he thought of that encounter and how he interpreted it. And so those interpretations will be different.
Yeah, it does sound fun. Yeah.
So now, are these full-length books, or are they short stories, or?
They are not short. I write till they're done. The first book is almost 400 pages.
Okay. Wow.
So
good.
I had an agent early on tell me that if it was more than 185 pages, it would never sell, and.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, boy, have we become the Twitter society, the keep it to 140 characters. And then, War and Peace, how long was that? It's like,
It depends on how the book is written. If it's something that sucks you in and doesn't let you go, I don't think people care how long it is.
Yeah.
You
get in a book like that, and exactly that. I mean, the Mists of Avalon was a book that did that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fairly long book. And I remember reading that book. I couldn't wait to get home from work to pick the book up again and see what was going to happen until bedtime. And then, close it at bedtime, come in from work the next day. I've got to see what's going on in this book. And it was one of those books that pulled me in like that. There have been a few.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's true. If every author listened to somebody that said, no, you can't do it that way, how many great books would not be out there?
Yeah.
I always I know this is going to sound kind of hokey, but whenever I'm kind of feeling bad and like, oh, gosh, maybe I'm doing something wrong, maybe I'm just wasting my time, blah, blah, you get on, every now and then writers will get on their little pity party, parade, but then I stop and I think, wait a minute, J.K. Rowling, how many people told her no?
Right.
Before somebody finally said, I think we can do something like this, and then boom, I would sure hate to be those ones that told her no. I don't know if they'd still be employed.
Right, and
there are
certainly lots of stories like that where people were told no, you can't do this, and that's no good, and then the writer proved them wrong. The actor proved them wrong, or the screenwriter proved them wrong, et cetera, et cetera. There are people who in Hollywood who certainly wish they had not turned down certain roles. I think that's part of it, and we all hope for that. I certainly would like to be richer than the Queen of England, but if I don't ever get to that point. then, and I'm probably not going to, because I think children's books probably outsell greatly the kinds of books that I'm writing. My books are profoundly adult books. They are they are about, they're kind of like about the misfit in all of us. And they are about those struggles, those wounds that we have from childhood that we then struggle through our adult life to overcome, to make sense of, to figure out. And those people who are able to conquer those wounds from their childhood are the kinds of characters in my book.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that may not sell. It probably is never going to sell like J.K. Rowling. And that's okay with me. If the book touches people, if there are sufficient enough people that it reaches and it touches them, that's what's important to me. It thrills my heart to have one person tell me that they really enjoyed the book. But the book,
I wasn't meaning the
well.
I'm sorry. I wasn't meaning the well. I was meaning having faith in what you're doing and keep doing it no matter how many people say. That's what I'm meaning. Is to have faith in what you're doing.
Well, I'm doing that too, because I'm not going to stop. And I assume that this will be what I will do in my retirement. I'll be 99 years old if I live that long, and I will still be writing. But one of the things, you know, I've written the self-help books before. I tried to write the self-help book, and the closest I ever came was the little Creating Calm pamphlet. And the coloring book. And it occurred to me as Lovella was telling her story that she had teachers who came to her, who guided her. There's one character in the book who basically taught her some spiritual lessons. And I think that's a beautiful thing about certain types of fiction, that if it kind of goes in the back door and teaches a life lesson through the story.
Exactly. Exactly.
People may be more likely to get the life lesson that way, and they may be more likely to enjoy reading the life lesson than if they have to sit down and go through, you know, okay, if you do this, then you need to do that, and then you need to do this and make sure you do that. You know, it ceases to be an instruction manual. But it's kind of, in some respects, maybe a subconscious instruction manual.
Exactly, exactly. And it's that way. I mean, how many of us have read a book or watched a movie that had, you know, it wasn't meant to be a teaching tool, but the characters, that what they're going through in their lives, what they're experiencing, what they have to overcome or whatever, we can relate with. And because they have overcome the difficulty, it, you know, it shows us, you know, there is hope. We can overcome whatever's bothering us in our life or whatever's holding us back. And, you know, there's little subtle things, like you said. You know, like you said, they're subtle, you know, subconscious, that I think it's good to be able to put that out there for people.
And sometimes they're not so subtle. Sometimes those lessons are in your face.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just thinking back on books, on movies that have touched me, and why they touched me, and the things that, I mean, I love to laugh and watch a comedy or that kind of thing, or read a comedy, but the kinds of things that touch me are the things that make me think.
True.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Very true. Very true. Oh, you guys, I cannot believe it. Yeah, I can't believe it. We've got 10 minutes left. 10 minutes left of this show. We've been yakking all that time. Can you believe it already? Okay. Before we get off of here, why don't you tell us about your upcoming projects, what you're working on?
One of the things I'm working on right now is a book of poetry, and I look to get that published fairly soon. I'm sort of doing that at the same time that I'm working on finishing this next novel. So I'm working on the book of poetry, and then I think I'm going to go back and go through the Creating Calm anxiety management book and maybe redo it and republish that. So they're kind of a mix. And of course, I'm always posting things on Twitter, on Pinterest, on Facebook, things that a lot of times that I do a photograph. I'm a photographer also. I will go and take pictures of various different things. I love hummingbirds. I'll take pictures of hummingbirds and flowers and different things like that. And I've started taking my quotes, and most of the time these things that come into my head are things that over the years I've heard myself say to a patient at one point or another. And I've just been taking those, putting those on those photographs and posting those on Twitter and all these different venues, the Instagram, et cetera. And I may try to put that together in a book and put a collection of those together with the photographs and the quotes.
Well, we've got all your social media links. We put them here on the Blog Talk page. Got your Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, Goodreads, YouTube, Pinterest, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr. And we can also find them on deadlyreads.com. Go into the Deadly Reads Radio tab for the month of August, and you will find Carlisle up there, and all your links are there also so people can find you. So, everybody,
please
go
do
on
find
there.
Me.
Huh?
I said, yep, please do find me.
Yeah, I was just going to say, everybody, go there, hook up with Carlisle, follow him on Facebook, go check out his books on Amazon, you know, buy his books, leave reviews, be nice and leave reviews, make the author smile, and I'm sure that he would appreciate it very much. Like I said, we have all your social media links, so they can find you there and hook up with you. Do you have any other things you're working on, too, other than the poetry and stuff?
Well, not really. You know, I try to keep up with social media, and I do try to respond to people. I sometimes end up not having enough time in the day, and it may take a while before I can get around to responding. But I try to make every effort to respond to people when they message me or tweet to me or send me some kind of thought or idea, and positive or negative, I try to get back with folks on that. And yes, I the reviews, Amazon reviews, happy for that to happen. And you know, even a bad review is a good review. So because even a bad review, it means that the person read the book. It means that they had thoughts about it, and a lot of times what it means is it means that even if it the one person who I know of who did a bad review of the book on Amazon obviously had some very strong feelings, and though you know, the book hit those feelings, even if it hit them in a negative way. And so at least he did not come away from it just going, "Man, that's boring." You know, he didn't come away from it just throwing it down. From reading the review, he obviously read the book cover to cover. So, you know, if somebody reads the book cover to cover and they think it's just terrible, that's fine. You know, for one thing, it might be good feedback for me. It might teach me something that I do something different in the next one. You never know.
Well, I've learned since being published that those types of reviews, they don't really hurt you, you know, because, you know, if you have nothing but five stars, you know, nothing but five stars, people don't believe it. They think, yeah, your friends and family, you know, you got to have a little bit of everything in there, you know. And that type of a review, it's not like, you know, he didn't know how to write, you know, it's full of errors or whatever like that, you know. I mean, that's a critique. That's okay, you know. And those types of reviews aren't going to hurt you anyway. People are going to say, oh, well, they didn't like it. Maybe I will, though. I've had people tell me that. They went in there and checked my reviews and, you know, I've got my fair share of bad ones, too. You know, I went through the whole crying in the pillow one night when I got a whole bunch of them, and, you know, those were my fault. But anyway, that's a long story I won't go into, but you know, people went in and they read them, and they said, you know, Linda, they came back later. I ended up being friends with them on Facebook, you know, getting to them on Facebook and stuff. And they go, I read, you know, some of the bad reviews, and I thought, the book can't be that bad. And they got it anyway, and they loved it. So, mm-hmm. So hey, you
right.
know, I mean.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
sometimes
you gotta,
people miss the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes they miss mm-hmm. the point.
That's
and,
true.
And, you
like
know,
you
I know
said,
I've done that before. Like, I,
yeah.
you know, I read Jonathan Livingston Seagull in high school and thought, well, what boring crap. And then I read Jonathan Livingston Seagull when I was in my late 20s and went, oh, my God, this is so profound.
Right. True.
You
that's
weren't ready
so
for
true.
It. You weren't ready for it. Yep. That's right.
Right.
Yep. So true. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. gosh darn, we've had a great time with you tonight. And
I've had a great time. Thank you.
Yeah. It's been good.
Thank you for Thank you for explaining how you're doing your characters and everything, because I would told Lisa, I said, I'm really nervous about writing the book this way because, like I said, I've never done it. But I think I'm doing okay after listening to you talk. I think I'm doing it right. So, yay!
Mm-hmm.
I feel so much better now. You help me feel like I'm doing okay, so that's good.
Great.
But, yep. So, anyway, nothing else to tell us about before we call it a night?
Oh, my goodness, I can't think of anything that I'm suave, debonair, great-looking.
I know, we saw your picture. We
actor,
got it out there.
Fabulous singer, et cetera, et cetera. Just tell all the Hollywood producers to call me.
Okay, we will. Well, Carlisle, it's been a great time. We wish you much success with your books. Keep us posted on what all you're doing, and maybe you'll be back on with us sometime and tell us more about your next books you're working on.
Thank you. That would be great. I would love to do that. I'd love to come
right.
back
oh,
maybe
okay.
when the next one gets published.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, he was really, really nice. I like him.
Yeah, he was. Mm-hmm.
He was
nice.
Fun. Okay, we're about out of time. Next week, we have Tavia Dupree joining us. She writes some hot and saucy books. So it's going to be a hot, sizzling time here on Deadly Reads Radio next Thursday night. We hope you'll be here and join us again. And I want to thank Carlisle again for joining us. He was a wonderful guest, learned a whole bunch. Go check out his books, folks. Check out the links. We got all the links, so go hook up with him on Twitter and Facebook and Amazon, and I'm sure he'd appreciate it. So, okay, Lisa, it's another night.
Hey, night.
Talk to you later. Good night.
All right, night.